Exit number 11938, room 45.
Mr. G. Eisen, Rear 45. You're talking about the repairs to vehicles and the quality of the vehicles that you had, Mr. Eisen.
Well, the quality was quite good, really. There was little snags. Well, I mentioned most of them, overheating points. And if it was really serious, of course, it was taken into the camp that night, and that would be transferred to the LAD, who were coming along. The LAD is like the air detachment of Remy, who were coming along, the one with each brigade. They were coming along, and they would probably put it on a transporter. If it was a major thing, they'd probably put it on a transporter, or they might just drop it off at the nearest army depot, because by now they were getting depots all the way along the line, more or less. And we just said about the carriers have been guarding Ben Gardine, which was a major depot, and they'd gone up on transporters and they'd carried on guarding there. And those depots all the way along the line now. So if LAD decided that it wasn't worth taking on, it would be dropped off at one of the depots and maybe sent back to the Delta, or scrapped, or maybe cannibalised to set another one going. There was a lot of cannibalising done, pinching bits from one to keep another one going. Because obviously, when you think of the number of vehicles that we had and the various types of vehicles that we had, I mean, by this time, I think we had five different types of Bren gun carrier. And we had the old Universal, there was a Canadian creeping in, there was an Indian carrier creeping in, all more or less on the same style, but not exactly the same. Most of them had the Ford engine, the V8 engine, but there was also another one creeping in now with an old engine at Tillings, was creeping in. And the mortars had sort of taken one type of carrier, and the Bren guns had taken the other type, our own standard type. And the anti-tank now were trying to get over a carrier to pull their anti-tank guns over the rougher country. The Portees were very good, though, four-wheel drive, mostly Chevrolet. But even a four-wheel drive doesn't do too well in among the hills, so they were trying to drag them with borrowing a carrier every now and again. As we'll see when we get to Marath, that Major Kirby did some work with the carriers.
When you had a vehicle which was unrepairable as far as you were concerned, it was earmarked for LAD, did you have to have someone to stay with the vehicle, or did you mark it in some way?
We would try and get it to the LAD. The LAD were always way behind us. I mean, after us, normally, if we were travelling as a brigade, LAD, for instance, we might be on the road one day, the 9th Battalion be on another day, and the 8th Battalion another day, and then you get brigade headquarters, and so you could be 4 days, if you're travelling by road, this is, you could be 4 days before the LAD comes along. And occasionally, we did have to drop one off at the roadside where, if it was a broken axle or something like that, if it was a spring, we'd just put a broken chock in and tell him to carry on as best he could. We'd like to even take the propeller shaft off the one side and let him drag it along on the front wheel. You know, with the nearly all four-wheel drive, we'd let him drag it along on the front wheels. And that took any problem away from the springs, keeping the springs working forwards and after. So all those all sorts of things. But they came so regular that you tend to forget about them, quite honestly. Unless you just jog my mind there on one or two things. Springs, of course, were a major problem. And if ever we got the chance and we saw something that had been maybe on fire, if it had been on fire, the springs very often were soft. Well, that wasn't too bad a thing, because a soft spring would often survive where a proper spring would break. With it being softer, it would bend rather than break. So we used to, even if they'd been fired, we would often take a spring off, if we had the time. But when you're travelling on the road, you don't always have the time.
You mentioned one remark you made that one day the ninth will be travelling, one day they... How did that work?
Well,
on
the road, the brigade will be given an allocation of road space. You must remember that when we're in this situation where there's mines on either side of the road, there's no desert you can use. You've got the coast and a bit of land which is mined, and you've got a road and a desert which is a mud flat or a salt flat or just impossible. Then you want to use the road, or what road there is. And the way the course of North Africa is, you've got to keep more or less to the road, because you're turning that way, you're turning right all the time, more or less. So you've got to keep in. There's no going across. Well, you could cut Cyrenaica off by going straight across, because that is a bulge which goes out to sea. But the rest of the time, you're turning around with the coastline. So there's no way you can really... There's no shortcuts. So brigade is given a stretch of road with times when they can have that stretch of road. That's the theory. There are so many people who want to be on that road and getting forward. I mean, you might get a couple of artillery quads, and the 25 pounders in trouble. Well, they might be 2 or 3 days behind. Not from our division, they could be from somebody else's division who are 2 days behind. They've been broken down for 2 days. And they're wanting to get on the road as well, at the same time as brigade's been allocated the road. So I'm saying they were a day behind, they could have been 8 hours behind. It did happen to be days in some cases, because that was the way. When we were coming up from the Delta, and there was no rush kind of thing, when we were, it wasn't so urgent. But this time it's got urgent. We know there's something going on. And the road was just packed.
So you would be giving me a stretch of road and a date and time?
The time to get on it and get off it.
And when you got off it, what did that mean? You just pulled to one side and waited for the limits?
Well, they had developed these lager places. A lager is a place where you pull in and bed down for the night, virtually. It might not be for the night, it might just for a meal, but in most cases you talk of a lager as being the place to bed down for the night. So I suppose the MPs really sort these places out, the military police, and you're giving you a place to stop for that night. Now there might be the next one might go another 5 miles, or they might stop 5 miles further back, or it's bad to tell exactly, because with the roads being the land on the side of the road being so bad, might be some distance before you can get off the road again. As I've tried to explain going up, we had to put them on tow, and sometimes three on tow, to get them going on the road. So you were allowed a certain time to do this distance, and then you were off the road in your lager, and somebody else was using that stretch of road then for the next 3 or 4 hours, and then maybe you'd be back on the road again. Brigade had an allocation of time, you see, and then brigade used to allocate us a time to be on that stretch of road.
And your battalions varied in which was in front, or what order they went in?
Oh yes, that was dependent entirely on brigade, how the battalions went.
Moving on that stretch?
Yes. The battalion, brigade would be given a time to be on the road, and brigade would give each battalion a time to be on the road. And then towards the end, you've got brigade HQ coming up, or you might have brigade HQ in the front. if Brigadier wanted to be way forward with his signals and orders to it doing a recce or something, he might even take the battalion COs with him and shoot off and make whatever time he could up the road. But always at the back, you've got the rear echelons, the quartermasters stuff, brigade quartermasters, not our own quartermasters, on a move like this. The full battalion is with us. The full battalion is moving in column altogether. And then you've got the other two battalions, then brigade, and then you've got a certain amount of what do you call a brigade quartermasters. Might be part of the RAC supply company. And then at the end of that, you've got the LAD, who do the mopping up operation on the way up. Of course, they're not in any hurry to get anywhere normally. They have no fighting to do. They're purely a service operation, so they have no fighting to do. Now, on the that night, we'd done 153 miles.
Which night was this?
This is the night of the Wednesday the 10th. Well, actually, it was Thursday the 11th when we got there. I think this particular night, if I remember, it was something like 3:30 when we got in. And, it was just another collapse. You know, didn't even stop to fill up. We hoped somebody would do it in the morning before. Well, actually what we're trying to do was, we thought that with us being the back of the column, we might have time to shove it, do some filling up before we set off again. And the vehicles on tour, I mean, the other fitters had probably been in and had a meal by the time we got in. And they would do repairs. I just collapsed anyway because I was flat out.
What kind of time span would there be between the first vehicle of your battalion moving off on the spell of the road and you at the back getting away?
Yes. On this particular occasion, it was only a matter of about 7 hours, I believe.
Between the first vehicle moving off and you moving off?
Yeah. Because we weren't working at this 120 yards distance. We were more or less getting on the road and straight on. Having said that, you would find that there was the odd people coming on the road. Like I've explained about quads and guns. You're bound to let them go through because if you don't do, you've got the whole road stopped up. So you've got to try and work in where you can. Generally speaking, it was very good. We all got away fairly sharp. I'm saying 7 hours, maybe 5 hours would be more at this stage. But when we're in France, it was a good 7 to 10 hours before the last one got away. And I did say about the last one was doing 70 miles an hour, trying to catch up with the people concertining on the 120 yards distance. On the Friday, we went 13 miles southwest of Sarcis. Sarcis is well up in Tunisia. I'm saying well up, it's not that far up really, it's about 120 miles into Tunisia. And it's 13 miles off the coast, or thereabouts. Now there's an island here that I know there's a story, but I can't think what it is. Djerba. To look at the map, you just think somebody put a hand in the north of Africa and pulled this bit out. It fits in exactly, the island fits exactly in the gap where you've got a great lump of sea going down into the African coast. Now, I suppose Zarus is something like 18, 90 miles from Marath. Marath was north of the Marath line, and the Marath line was in front of Marath. Well, we spent this place as ours is. Now, we've got either guns here. That one's a good. we were only 24 miles that day. But we got to within the guns, and the stand to at dawn and dusk. It wasn't very healthy again. We weren't too keen about that. And the following day, we only moved about 16 miles to a place called Joff, and that was right opposite the island of Duverva, and quite close to Bednin. In fact, I think we went through Bednin to get to Joff. Bednin was a typical French African, you almost say a town, I would think, not quite a town, but a big village. Not a lot of trees around it, but it was quite a biggish village, quite well populated. And then, of course, we're getting quite close now to where we want to be. And we spent a couple of days there. The lads, they were working with the Scorpion tanks. The first time we'd actually worked with them. Flo, we'd seen them on exercises in the Delta. We're actually working with them now and exercising with them. And scaling cliffs. I don't know whether I wasn't particularly involved with the scaling the cliff business, and I wasn't particularly involved with the Scorpion tanks. We were too busy getting the vehicle sorted out. The carriers had joined us now. The carriers came up from Ben Guardian and joined us at Joff. So we're back now as a full battalion. And of course, we've still got a few repairs to carry truck, but I mean, forever we've got a day, we're always into repairs that have been neglected for the journey. We've done 850 miles from after leaving Benghazi up to this point, so we had quite a rough time. And Monty had just sorted Rommel out with his new 17-pounder. The 17-pound gun, she was a great tool, even against the new Tiger, which was on the go now, the 55-ton Tiger. Rommel had done the same things he did with Alam Alpha, except he now had the 17-pounder, which was great, and waited for Rommel coming to him. But when Rommel turned back, he held the troops back, he held them. And Montgomery let Rommel go and held his troops there, preparing for this attack at Marath.
Had you reached the stage when you knew you were going to Marath? Had you been told?
Yes, I think we knew we were going to Marath then. Almost certainly. Yeah.
Was there any change in the mood of the battalion?
The battalion was doing these scaling wadis. We're actually in a wadi. I think they call it I've forgotten the name of it now. But we're actually in a wadi, living in this wadi. And they were doing this training up and down the sides of it. And trying to get across and doing all sorts of exercises as though this wadi was exactly wadi's also. So we had a good idea where we were going at this time. And we also knew at this time the French said that the Marath line would never be broken.
Is there any change in the mood of people in the battalion, knowing that this is coming and this is looming? Did you detect any change?
There is a, shall I say, a heightening of tension. Nothing you would really notice, I don't think. Maybe a quickness. I suppose the adrenaline starts running, and there is a speeding up of actions and retorts, maybe. There's no malice or anything. But generally, yes, there's a tension. There is a tension. I mean, in this particular place, we were in among the long-range Witzers and the 25-pounders. And we were training as they were battling away over our heads all the time. It's not a comfortable feeling, really, to be having these things going over, especially when you're quite near to the blast and it's nearly taking your air off as it goes, the blast. But we got on quite well with the gunners. Some of them had been with us all the time, and they'd gone up ahead of us. Because the 69th Brigade were already in the Marath line. You know, the 69th Brigade was in 50 Dave, and they were already there. And they did an attack a few nights before we did. So the gunners had been divisional gunners, and some of them worked with the brigade quite a bit. In fact, I believe the old major was there, Major Forbes. Major Forbes, I think he was there. But I think he was colonel by now. He had run the brigade for a spell, you know, and
he was a gunner.
He ran the brigade at Mersey Matruh for a short while. The Marath line was about 15 miles from Medellin. It stretched from Zalit on the coast into the Matmata Hills, M-A-T-M-A-T-A. It was about 100 miles long. The hills were about 100 miles long, and they ran from east to west, about 50 yards wide. Now, while we were still at Alamein, the long-range desert group had been up into Tunisia, and they'd found a way round these Matmahara hills and onto El Hamma. And why we actually made such a thing about attacking the Marath line, I don't know, because the French said it would never be broken. It wasn't really broken, it was bypassed. It's bad to say. I'll carry on with it anyway, and we'll come to it. It was built on the style of the Maginot line, but the Germans had reinforced it quite a lot. It was built around the Wadi Zawzaw, the Wadi running out of the Matmahara Hills. Matmata Hills, right into the sea. Now, at the north end of the hills, of this line, at the seaward end of the line, they dug a tank trench in front of the wadi. And that went inland for about 4 miles. And then it crossed the wadi and went on the... It started off on the east side of the wadi, quite away, about 1,400 yards away from the wadi. The anti-tank ditch went south on the east of the wadi to Xiba West, which was a fort 1,300 yards from the coast. From there, it crossed to the west of the wadi, or northwest of the wadi, and carried on down into the hills, some 15 miles. But at before it gets to the hills, the anti-tank ditch, another one comes off at right angles and crosses the Wadi again, and then works its way back into the hills, into the foothills, well into the foothills. And that surrounded a place called the... the Bastion, which was really the headquarters. And the Bastion could look right down the Wadi and down the Antitanstis. He could see the coast and the approaches, even the coast road. That could see everything from the Bastion, more or less. It was way in the hills. And the control centre was in there, and the anti-tank ditch did a right angle and then went round it. It was mined either side, between the Wadi and the anti-tank ditch was mined. On the night of the 16th of March, 69 Brigade had shifted quite a lot of the outposts approaching the anti-tank ditch in the north and the Wadi in the south. In the very south, around the Bastion, the 201 Guards Brigade were attacking continually. We were laid up in Wadi Zizar, which was about 4 miles down the coast, down the east of the operations at this particular time. And the attack was going to go in on the 18th. We sent some men up and they did some patrolling to try and find the ways across. But unfortunately, on the 18th, we'd had a very severe downpour and the Wadi was 6 or 8 feet deep in most places. And of course, at the end, it's tidal. When, if the tide's the wrong way, it builds the stream up. If the tide's coming in, it backs the stream right away the full length of the Wadi. But we did get some men across on the 18th, and they did some recce and roundabout, and they thought they'd found some ways across. We were to pull up on the 18th, and we were going to go up into a place called the Chet. Anyway, it was a place where we were going to assemble, ready before we went to the start line.
Now, in this situation, where were you?
I was still at the back now of A Echelon. As I explained before, we had the advanced headquarters, and then we had A Echelon, and then we had B Echelon, and then the rear HQ behind again.
A Echelon is the take the troops up,
the carriers, the mortar platoon, the anti-tank guns, and the platoon trucks. Did we ever do the platoon trucks there? We did. The COs and all the rest of them, the signals headquarters, the MO, all the fighting people. I mean, the MO isn't the fighting people, but he's with the fighting people. And as we set off to go up into this Chet Mackin, I think they call it, we got out onto the road, and there was a single military policeman there, and he stopped us on the brow of the hill, and we were told to wait until he said we could leave. And he pointed to another MP about a mile away. We could just see him away in the distance, and we're told that when he let us go, we'd go like hell, because we were in view of the enemy over this ridge, and the enemy fired at a cloud of dust soon as he saw any dust go up, he'd fire.
This was daylight?
This was daylight, yes. And at this time I was using a 50 underweight truck with Chitty Stango as the driver. And true enough, as we went along the road, we could see the blast from the guns in the distance, and then we'd see the puffs of smoke on the side of the road, fortunately. There's something there again. When you're talking of distance with a gun, for instance, at Alamein, they used the older guns for the barrage. Now, when the creeping barrage started, they wanted all the new guns because there wasn't so much wear in them. I think we were fortunate in this state that the German guns were a bit worn and they were either side of the road rather than hitting the road. But we went like hell, and we found another policeman. He turned us down a road where we're out of view again, towards the sea. Not very nice, because there's our guns firing behind us and over the top of us, and then we've got the German guns firing towards us as well. It wasn't very happy at all.